HRT, when to adjust estrogen, progesterone, or testosterone. I'm Dr. Valerie Davidson from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Robert Mackey from Progress Your Health. So the question we're going to do today was submitted through Ask the Doctor on our website, but we did do another question about her on another previous episode. I believe we call it, her name was Lisa.
Yeah, not Lisa.
Her real name, but her made up name.
Yeah, we change everybody's names. And it was from the episode, Why am I spotting after starting HRT?
Yeah. So this is an extension to that, the one we talked about. So you can go back and look at that episode and you want to go ahead and read it?
Yeah. No, and I appreciate having sort of this back and forth. She was very appreciative of us, you know, talking about her question. So I'm going to, I can read it even without the glasses because it's far enough away. All right. So this is Lisa's follow-up question to that other episode we did. So thank you very much for answering my question on why I'm spotting on YouTube. I truly appreciate you both. My biased cream is 50-50 ratio, 5 milligrams, 2 clicks in the morning, 2 clicks in the evening. So that's 0.5 gram in the morning and then 0.5 gram in the evening. That was recommended to me and I ended up doing 1 click. So that's 0.25 gram in the morning and 1 click, 0.25 gram in the evening. The testosterone cream is 4 milligrams for 2 clicks. That's 0.5 gram, but I do 1 click in the morning. I was spotting almost every day and some days more like a period. I started my period around age 12 and heavy periods as I got older. I'm 53 and I'm 5'3½", 110 pounds. I had a transvaginal ultrasound which showed some thickening in the uterus, but nothing else. I retook my blood test 3 months after my initial blood test. My testosterone was 7. Now it's 46. My progesterone was 0.5. Now it's 8.9 on 100 milligrams of progesterone. My estradiol was 17. It's now 142. After the blood test, I'm on the same dose of Biest and up the progesterone to 125 milligrams. So far, no bleeding and night sweats have lessened. Unsure whether to take sustained release or instant release progesterone. And I take the instant right now because I tend to get tired. The hormone specialist wants me on 2 clicks, 0.5 gram of testosterone for my bones. Bone density came back at a -3. I eat a good diet and I will start using weights. Do you recommend lowering the Biest cream? And if so, should I take 2 clicks in the morning, in the evening, or just in the morning? I'm on static dosing, but what would benefit my heart, brain, and bones? By the way, I took my blood test a couple hours after applying the cream. I'm so grateful that I found you both through the podcast. Thank you for all you do. Now, with this question from Lisa, she did do a follow-up question or actually another Ask the Doctor question a couple of days later. It looks like even on that 125 milligrams of progesterone instant release capsule, she did start bleeding. So even though she said, I wasn't, but now she's bleeding again. So this is kind of what we're looking at is having this HRT. We're trying to find the optimal doses for her bone density because a -3 is osteoporosis. You know, anything -2.5 and beyond is osteoporosis. So we've got to focus in on those bones. And she is a petite female, you know, 110 pounds. She's little. So of course, that's one of the big things with the bones. Like she said, the heart and the brain, but we have to protect that uterus because it looks like her uterus is really sensitive to that estrogen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is where it gets challenging, right? So her dose, 5 milligrams, she's doing half of that. So she's technically doing 1 click twice a day, right? So she's doing 2.5 milligrams and she's still having a bleeding problem. Right. Is that the math that you said?
Yeah. So originally, so her Biest cream is 50-50 ratio. So 50% is estriol, E3, and 50% is estradiol, E2, excuse me. And that's 5 milligrams total. So it was originally supposed to do 2 clicks in the morning, 2 clicks in the evening. So that'd be 2.5 milligrams of Biest and 2.5 milligrams of Biest at night, mm-hmm. which you would break that down as a 50-50 ratio. What would that be?
0.125?
Yeah, 1.25.
Or 1.25.
Yeah, 1.25 each. I wish we had like a little whiteboard and I could write math on there.
Yeah.
But
I got my legal pad over there. I don't have a piece of paper.
But it looked like she ended up doing instead 0.25 gram or 1 click in the morning of that 5 milligrams, which would be 1.25 in the morning and 1.25 biased in the evening. But then after the blood test, it looks like she's not really sure where she should move that that biased. And, well, and I don't want to get...
It's clear. Yeah. Now, granted, this is for educational purposes. Yes. We're not giving anybody advice. This is just for people to learn, because the math and how that gets broken down, it's important to understand that. But it is so specific to the woman, mm-hmm. right? She's small, she's petite, she's prone to heavy periods in the past. Her body's obviously sensitive to it, right? Because she's already 53 and a half and still having a bleeding problem. I would expect this more from a woman that was just on the tail end of perimenopause. You'd think she'd already be in menopause by now, and maybe she was, and then now she's using the HRT and is immediately starting the spotting and the bleeding.
Well, it's trying to balance it all truly is she's bleeding. So we have to do something about that estrogen her uterine tissues are very estrogen sensitive. That's why I was so glad she came back and said, okay, she got her period at 12. Mm-hmm. So, and she also has a history of heavy periods, which means that uterine lining is sensitive to estrogen. So we know that we've got to stop that bleeding. So we're going to figure out how to do that. Now, looking at the dosings, there's so many different ways to do dosings. It is one of those things where if, you know, as educational purposes, is we need to adjust that estrogen, and then we also need to adjust that progesterone. I'd like to kind of circle back a little bit and talk about her progesterone first. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you, I think two things sort of need to happen, but I'm curious on your take. I think her progesterone needs to go up, and I think her estrogen needs to go down. Usually you're going to do one or the other, or in this case, potentially both. Because she's had such a, you know, right out of the gate, so much bleeding, the progesterone goes up and needs to go up, but the estrogen probably needs to be dropped off a little bit.
And it is interesting. So when you're taking oral progesterone, I do feel like that protects the uterine lining better than the progesterone cream. So that's right out there. I'm glad she's taking, or anybody with the uterus that might have thickened lining or you're trying to prevent that, is you're taking an oral progesterone. Now there is the sustained release and the instant release. So the instant release you take, it goes right into your system, where the sustained release takes its time throughout the night. But ideally the next morning, you don't want to have a whole bunch of progesterone in your system, because like Lisa's talking about here, I tend to get tired. Yeah. So I do feel like the instant release is probably a good idea for somebody that is feeling tired or groggy in the morning after taking progesterone.
Yeah, like a little progesterone hangover.
Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting because I know that she took her progesterone the night before. She got her blood test the next morning, like she said, after applying her creams a couple hours after. But her progesterone level was 8.9 in the morning after taking that progesterone the night before. So there is some of that progesterone that is hanging around in her system.
That's a pretty good level.
That is almost too high. Once you start getting in the double digits, you start thinking, okay, this person's going to have a hard time waking up in the morning. They're going to have a relationship with their snooze button. It's going to be hard to get up off the couch or get motivated, because progesterone is very relaxing. Yeah. But we need the progesterone to help keep that lining of the uterus.
Thin. Wouldn't you think at the 8.9 that would be doing enough to prevent that the thickening of the lining? I mean, clearly not. You'd think 8.9 would be good enough, right? You'd think it'd be more than enough. But clearly it's not enough to, you know, to resolve the bleeding issue.
Yeah, exactly. Her uterine lining is really sensitive to that estrogen. Mm-hmm. So one thing you could do with the progesterone is keep it at the instant release, raise it up, but have her take it earlier. So I have some people, as long as you're not driving or, you know, or you don't have to do something in the evening, is take it at 7 o'clock at night, take it at 7:30. Don't take it at 10:30 before you go to bed, take it a little bit earlier, so that by the morning time, come 6 o'clock, 6:30, when it's time to wake up, there's not as much in your system. Cause I do feel like we'd want to raise up that progesterone first. Like that would be something with anybody that's having that bleeding. Yeah. Now, on a side note is, let's say this just kept going on and on and on. She doesn't have any fibroids. She didn't mention that. So it's not like fibroids are being activated or endometriosis. Is maybe even, not that you want to jump up to some, you know, intervention, but maybe even doing an ablation.
Already? You know, I don't think she needs an ablation quite yet.
Maybe
I think
down the road, you know, if it's not subsiding, you know, you're going to want to do something about that. Cause I do feel like she needs that estrogen, because her bone density, that score, her on her DEXA scan, the T score is a -3.
Well, what about, I know that you're always, you know, conservative with the, estrogen dosing just in general. What about if you, 50-50, clearly maybe not the right place to start. I mean, more like an 80-20, so less of that estradiol. A little bit of a lower dose across the board, and then just gradually, clearly five or even close to that is too much. Mm-hmm. So reducing it quite a bit, getting her body acclimated to the estrogen, and then just kind of gradually titrate that dose over time, you know, as at the same time she has a higher progesterone dose, but then push the testosterone a little bit more mm-hmm. in the interim as her body is acclimating to the exogenous estrogen.
That's a great idea. Now, testosterone will convert to estradiol because it can aromatize to estradiol. So that's one way that you could still support her estradiol by supporting testosterone.
And some of her other symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly, with some of her other symptoms, because testosterone is awesome for bone density. Mm-hmm. And you're right, maybe instead of doing a 50-50 ratio, go down to an 80-20 and then work your way back up.
But I know you even done 90-10 or even straight estriol for the ones that are sensitive like this.
Yeah, and work our way up, because I do have some patients that even their breast tissue is so sensitive to estradiol that they'll start growing. Like they'll grow a little extra, more breast tissue because mm-hmm. of that estradiol, because their bodies are so sensitive to it. And then there's other people that aren't sensitive to it. So it really depends on the individual. Yeah. But that probably would be one thing, is maybe just switch it to an 80-20 and then raise that progesterone up a little bit.
Yeah. So progesterone from 100 to 125 almost seems a little bit more like a lateral move. It should have been probably 150. Because she's already a little tired, maybe not going all the way up to 200, but 100 at it being 125, still having a bleeding problem, would you go up to 200 now?
Because
going to 150 probably wouldn't really still be enough of an increase.
But she did stop bleeding for a little bit. So that 25 mm-hmm. milligram increase did stop it for a little bit. But then, like I said, she wrote back a few days later said, I did start bleeding.
So it didn't work.
Yeah. So you could go up to 175 and even work your way up. So maybe 125 to 200 might make her feel, because she has that tendency to be tired, maybe go up to 150, 175, and then 200. Work your way up a little bit. Yeah. Because I always feel like, you know, instead of overshooting the mark, it's better to do a little less and then work your way into it.
Sure.
You know, we've got time. So I would say you're right. Maybe changing up that progesterone, changing up that biased, because a lot of women are, a lot of women, they are sensitive. And this is a big thing that we run into with people asking us questions as they take HRT for their bones and their mm-hmm. brain health, the longevity, cardiovascular, but they start bleeding.
Yeah. Well, the trend that we've seen on social media these days is that women in their 40s, you know, the perimenopausal women are getting more and more estrogen at a younger and younger age. You're just sort of asking for problems in that respect. You're going to have more bleeding problems. The younger you start estrogen when you're still having a period, the more bleeding problems you're going to potentially run into, because you're putting estrogen into a situation where it already has enough estrogen. Mm-hmm. Now, her being 53 and a half, you would have already assumed that she is already in menopause, right? So now her using the cream is sort of, like you've always said, kind of wakes up those ovaries a little bit, and her lining is very sensitive a little bit, in her case, goes a long way. I think she's a little bit of a unique situation, probably because of her body type. I have a patient that we talked about on a few episodes, very similar to her, 100 pounds, worried about bone density. She's on 5 milligrams. Her blood level was on the last blood test a couple of months ago when we tested it, was like 130-something. Hers was 142. And sure enough, went in for a transvaginal ultrasound, and her lining was like 10.3 millimeters, mm-hmm. right? 5 milligrams of bias typically does not do that, right? You know, anything under 5 milligrams typically does not raise the number. But even honestly, you've had situations too, they're on a couple of milligrams and they start bleeding.
Yeah,
so it's just so random, woman to woman to woman, on who's going to have the bleeding and who's going to be just fine. That's where it's, trying to standardize that into one size fits all. I mean, I know we say that a lot on our podcast, but it's really challenging to do that.
She is on the static dosing, and I do feel like women feel really good on those estradiols, right around 60 up to 100. But with static dosing, we don't go over 100 because it will eventually cause some of that lining of that uterus to start to get a little bit thick. So here she is, when she did her, she probably feels a whole lot better for her estrogen. What it went from 17 to 142. Yeah, probably feels a lot better, but 142 is a little high.
Now on static dosing.
On static dosing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, she did say, I took my blood test a couple hours after putting on the cream. So we do say, put on your creams and wait, you know, 4 or 5 hours before you, you know, you do test that blood to see if you're absorbing it. So that 142 is probably fairly accurate on that respects. And her testosterone came up beautifully, maybe even just keeping that testosterone right there, because it's right there in the high end of normal in the 40s. That's perfect. But I would say probably if she's going to be on static dosing, is would need to change that bias to either to the 80-20 to reduce down, because it's probably the estradiol that's having that effect on the uterine, on the uterine lining, is backing that down and then checking, or maybe even just changing her to rhythmic dosing.
Yeah, there's a, you know, we've had that situation, at least I've had that situation a few times. They keep bleeding, the only option really at that point is to switch them to rhythmic dosing, because now you can control the bleeding. You can make it predictable, as opposed to what she's dealing with right now. That can't continue. Like you said, ablation, you know, hysterectomy, you know, all that kind of stuff, because you can't. And once she's already established that, now it makes you a little bit nervous moving forward, because she is sensitive. She's going to need, if the bleeding does come under control at some point, she's going to probably need which isn't a big deal, but a regular transvaginal ultrasound to make sure that that lining is not still thickening. Mm-hmm. Where when you switch them to rhythmic dosing, now you control the bleeding, 24 to 28 day cycle. It happens the way it's supposed to. Just whether or not, in her case, if she could actually tolerate that or not, that's really the big question. You know, more than likely she probably could. And I've always said too, the more estrogen a woman has, the better she feels. So she feels a whole lot better at 142 estradiol level than she did at 17. Okay, that's for sure. But just, you know, because even the rhythmic dosing, her number is going to go even higher than that. But she could probably be on the rhythmic dosing at a very low end of the dosing scale, right? Still achieve numbers, you know, where we want it to be, and in some ways have sort of the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. The bleeding is predictable, safe that way, and honestly, even from a bone density at a -3, the rhythmic dosing probably would be very helpful. I've done it for women for bone density specifically for that reason alone, because it pushes up that estradiol level so high.
No, I agree, and I think the rhythmic dosing, you can get those physiological levels of estradiol, which are great for the bones, you know, because you see if we could try to build back that bone architecture there. And then also it's, you know, good for the heart and for the brain. And like you said, we'd be able to thicken up her uterine lining like it would be in a natural cycle and then have it slough off. So you create that safety for her just bleeding haphazardly every day. It looks like a period. It's not, you know, that's not something we want that. We don't want that to continue.
No. It can happen for the first little bit, the first few months. Okay, fine. Preferably more like the first few weeks. But, you know, when you're doing hormones, bleeding and hormones in the beginning is sort of par for the course. Right, you start hormones. Don't assume you're going to bleed, because we try really hard to not let that happen. But even still, you cannot predict who's going to bleed, who's going to not. You have to initiate some treatment, hope for the best. Right, you know, with a lot of educated guesses or a lot of experience behind those determinations. But if you do, you got to figure that out. Raise progesterone, lower estrogen, change the ratio, switch the dosing type, something in order to get that bleeding under control as quickly as possible.
And that's why I know on that previous podcast we talked about is getting that health history. So like, you know, when you have somebody sitting in front of you, when did you first get your period? If they got their periods quite early, then you know that their bodies are really sensitive to that estrogen. Were your periods heavy? Yeah, they were so heavy, they had to put me on birth control pills, or I'd had to have a DNC at some point in my life, or I have had really heavy, long periods. And you know that their bodies are sensitive to the estrogen, that if you give them too much estradiol off the bat, they're going to bleed. And then nobody wants to bleed. Trust me. Like you said, it might be par for the course, but the last thing someone wants is to go put their hormone cream on and 2 days later, they're bleeding.
Like, of course.
It's worrisome. You know, it's like, why am I bleeding?
Well, it's an inconvenience and it, you know, eventually becomes a worry. In the short term, not a big deal. You know, more of an inconvenience off the bat, because now, you know, something needs to be adjusted. And like you said, worrisome, because it can't continue that way, right? So it already automatically creates a little bit of a red flag that, okay, we need to, they're established that their body's sensitive to estrogen. I know there's a lot of bagging on it and bias that it, you know, they call it expensive lotion sometimes, but We've seen it, you know, even the smallest doses cause bleeding trouble. Even when their blood level doesn't even go up that high, 142, I've seen someone's blood level, you know, not even above 50 and they're still bleeding. Okay. So this is where hormone replacement really is. And I know you've said it many times. It's like an art and a science that, you know, you want it to follow the rules all the time, but there is no rules, right? There's some things that you sort of, you know, kind of use to dictate and make decisions, but there is no rules that follow true because every body's different. Every person's different. There's a lot of things that go into that. It's just, you know, in her case, you know, probably not fun, right? You know, having to deal with that consistently, a little bit probably disappointing, mm-hmm. right? Because trying to figure out what that, you know, what that magic dose is. But her body is, you know, kind of communicating something right from the get-go, you know, that she's just a little sensitive.
And usually when I start somebody with hormones or a bias, if they're going through menopause and they've just gone through menopause, they've come out of perimenopause, they're into menopause, they're getting the hot flashes, they're not having a period, I usually start them with an 80-20 ratio,
yeah.
a little more estriol to estradiol. I don't usually use the 50-50 ratio unless we're trying to switch somebody off of like the estradiol patch because their bodies are not going to respond to an 80-20 bias. It's like apples and oranges. An estradiol yeah. patch is completely different than doing a bias, especially when the dosages are so different. So when someone's coming off a patch, or let's say they're coming off, because I've had women in their 50s that come to see me and they're on birth control pills still.
Yeah.
So that I still have to do either a 50-50 ratio, or even I'll do my own ratios with a little bit more estradiol, because you have to have more estradiol to capture those receptors while you're, and then you can kind of slowly wean them down. So I would say in a case like this, you know, you ask, what's your past history? My past history is heavy periods. They were super mm-hmm. heavy. My mom had a hysterectomy in her 40s because she had heavy periods. You know, you get this idea and this picture that they're going to be sensitive to the estradiol. So I would start somebody like that on an 80-20, sometimes even do a 90-10. I'm like, just sure. bear with me. A month goes by so fast. Let's just, we don't want to be a bully to your body. We just want to introduce something and then see if it likes it. And then we'll work yeah. our way up, because it's so much easier, as you can see in this case here with Lisa, is once you do too much of a good thing and all you're trying to do is back out of it.
Yeah. You don't know. And you don't know where that backing out point is. You're just backtracking, you know. Now granted, she's only on 5 milligrams. So, you know, you can back it up, you know, quite a bit in that respect. But if you started low with the intention, take a good history, not to say that her practitioner didn't take a good history. I'm sure she did. But if you starting a woman newly into menopause at 5 milligrams, 50-50, is not a good idea, right? Just in general, even though 5 milligrams technically as an ending dose isn't a lot, as a starting dose is quite a bit, mm-hmm. right? You know, you and I usually start somewhere between 1 to 3, you know, somewhere in there, sometimes closer to 1, maybe closer to 3, and then work our way up from there. Because like you said, I mean, you want to get started and extend the amount of time where there's no bleeding as her body develops some tolerance or acclimates, whatever the word you want to say is, so you don't wake up the uterus, and you sort of prevent this entire situation from happening. So she gets off on a good foot, maybe on a lower dose, maybe it doesn't do much physiologically, right? Maybe her blood level's not that high, but you're establishing some tolerance first, and then you can increase from there. You know where she's at now. Now it's like, you know, now you got to backtrack, and that just makes it that much delays the whole process. And it's like, you're starting over from scratch already anyways.
Exactly. And I do feel like the hormone replacement is so important for women. I mean, I love it, but I also like how she mentioned, I'm going to start doing weights, because weights are really good for the bone density. There's so many, you know, anti-inflammatory lifestyles, really good for the bone density. You know, the hormones are one piece of the puzzle. It's a big piece of the puzzle.
Yeah.
But it's one piece, and there's all these other little pieces that we can work on
sure.
and pull it all together. Like, you know, you had mentioned about the testosterone. I think it's awesome she's on testosterone
yeah.
and the level came up. That's great for bone density, skin integrity, getting, you know, drive. So it's kind of fine tuning that, but it could be a little bit of her testosterone was aromatizing to estradiol too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the patient that I have that's very similar to Lisa's situation. So we did exactly that. And she's on 5 milligrams, 2 clicks twice a day. So 2.5 in the morning, 2.5 at night. But she's sensitive. I'll determine now that she's sensitive because her lining's too thick. So what we did is she's already on 200 milligrams of progesterone already anyways. So we're dropping the estrogen, but now we're going to kind of double down a little more on the testosterone. Now on her last DEXA scan, her, I know there's a lot of variability from one DEXA to the next, on your scoring, whatever, but her bone density did increase, so the testosterone, I think, is like a nice way to still get that bone benefit, and honestly, probably more bone benefit from the testosterone anyways, because her body is probably never going to be able to tolerate that much estrogen in the long term, regardless.
What about now, just to kind of flip it around a little, when I've used testosterone with women, I have to be very careful with it because I do find that some of those androgens, can cause, testosterone can convert into DHT, which will cause hair loss. Mm-hmm. I've seen acne issues. I've seen hair growth where they're saying, oh, I'm growing hair on my face because of that testosterone. So I do feel like testosterone's important, but some women, I just can't even tolerate it because nobody wants to lose their hair or get acne hair elsewhere.
Some women have a very low androgen tolerance, mm-hmm. right? They can tolerate hardly none. Mm-hmm. And they can't even do DHEA. They have, testosterone and DHEA would be sort of in the same category. They can't even do DHEA and they start breaking out, let alone doing any testosterone. Then other women, they have a pretty wide androgen tolerance and they can get away with a good amount of testosterone. But most women, on a dosing, 2 to 5 milligrams where most women are going to fall without there being those cosmetic side effects. You go above 5 milligrams consistently, you're going to start, depending on the woman, you're going to start having some issues. Now the one that I'm referring to my patient and this one is very similar body types, very similar situations, but very responsive to the hormones. Like you don't typically see 5 milligrams raising someone's blood level to 142.
No.
Right? 5 milligrams. In order to get a blood level unbiased, even at a 50-50 above 100, have to be a higher dose. But again, you can't really predict that. It is on a woman by woman basis. That's why the lab testing can be very helpful mm-hmm. To see where, they apply their cream, they go to the lab 4 to 6 hours later. So there's some consistency in the pattern there, and you can see how much those blood levels are going up or how much they're not going up depending on what their dosing is.
No, that's absolutely true. And that's why I think it's so interesting. We've gotten lots of comments on the YouTube channel, and I probably should look at them a little bit more and respond to them. But I really am truly grateful that people are responding. And then this question from Lisa came from Ask the Doctor. There's a little bit more room when you do the Ask the Doctor to be able to ask these specific questions. But I think it was so great to do the episode on her question, and then she gave us a follow-up.
Yeah, she gave us some feedback. Awesome. So, we can extend the conversation and hash these things out. These details are challenging mm-hmm. and difficult to find answers to. There's no one way or one size fits all, as we keep saying all the time. So it's really interesting and it's really exciting to be able to connect with people, on this level, both on the channel, on the community, through Ask the Doctor. It's really evolving into something really neat.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah. All right. So anything else to say about hers? I think we sort of, at least gave a little bit of an idea what we would do in a situation like this based on our experience. And again, we're not giving any medical advice here. This is just for educational purposes and a little bit about our thinking or our thought process of how we would break these down. Cause we've seen these kind of cases many, many times. Hopefully that's helpful for everyone and there's some value there. So any final comments?
No, this was great. Thank you. Anybody has comments or questions, write them down below.
We are on YouTube. So just write in the comments below if you have anything to say, or like Lisa did, you can go to our website, Ask the Doctor tab, enter your name and email, ask your question there. We do get lots of questions. We do try to cherry pick them, the ones that are either I wouldn't say easy, but ones that are, good learning opportunities, maybe relevant to what we had just been talking about, whatever. So until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.